everybody, I'm Randall. And please welcome tonight's speaker, Elaine.
I'm Elaine, a grateful member of Al-Anon. It is such a privilege and an honor to be here in this big fat room with you guys. And I thought he was going to share a little bit, like, hey, take some more time, you know. And all those birthdays, you know, I was just getting it, just sitting here going, you know, I could leave now. You know, I think I heard it all, you know, after everybody's gratitude and just the beauty of the program. And, you know, I want to thank God for my life today. And I've got some emotional sobriety today by the grace of God and the program of Al-Anon and these 12 steps and traditions and concepts. And let me just say, I'm nervous. Or, you know, you could say excited. You know, I had a sponsor tell me that one time. Well, you know, they are the same feeling. It's just how you frame it, you know. It's like, well, I'm excited to be here. I'm totally excited to be here. And, you know, this program, I tell newcomers, it's a program of personal freedom. It's a program of personal transformation and happiness, you know. And our literature talks about that, you know. We find contentment and happiness whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. And that has totally been my experience. And I got here in 87, totally, you know, I was 25 years old and I just felt like I was 105. Like, I just poured myself out. You know, and I started dying, I should say, you know, probably back when I, around 2 years old, when my dad stopped, you know, like hugging me and talking to me and relating to me. You know, I thought about that as I was thinking about talking tonight. I come from alcoholism. You know, my dad was the alcoholic. I have 5 brothers and a sister. I'm number 6. The brother right below me is also an alcoholic, and I love alcoholics. And, you know, I remember some of my earliest memories is just being, you know, cheek to cheek with my dad, and I smell his aftershave. I smell cigarettes and I smell whiskey. And so I never had like a negative, alcohol and all that was not a negative thing. It was like a positive thing. Like when he drank, he softened up. And when he drank, he was kinder and gentler. He was approachable, you know, like that. I heard about, you know, later on from my mom how, you know, outside of the home and stuff, he was, you know, he would get into trouble with his mouth and, you know, be really verbal at parties and get out of control and stuff like that. He was totally functional. I never recognized him as being an alcoholic until I got here and I was here for a while because he always went to work, made a lot of money, was great at what he did, you know, totally functional, you know. So anyway, alcoholism is a family disease and everyone's affected and nobody gets out alive. You know, I kept, as I was in recovery, you know, at first it was like I want everyone to, all my family to be in here with me, like, yeah, this is the answer, you know, and nobody wanted it, you know. It's like nobody wanted it, you know. And I thought, you know, I thought, well, you know, there's exceptions. Like some of these people might, you know, like my brothers and my sister, you know, they might just go along their way and really just have a great life, you know, and not, won't see any kind of, you know, symptoms, you know. And, you know, little by little, one by one, you know, this stuff just starts falling apart. You know, just starts falling apart. And when I got here, that's exactly where I was. I guess I should talk about maybe a little earlier. You know, I talk about my dad as the alcoholic, and, you know, I used to say my dad was the alcoholic, my mom was the doormat, and, you know, I thought, you know, just to kind of put it into a box, you know, you know, it's not fair. And my mom is like this beautiful, gorgeous, artistic, creative, sensitive woman, you know, and to kind of just do that with her, you know, is like wrong, you know, but I love my mom, my dad has just passed away recently, and I loved my dad. I love him now. I love him today. But only by the grace of this program, because he was very difficult to be around. You know, perfectionist, racist, sexist, very difficult to be around. You know, so I had kind of like this double, you know, when he was there, it's just like stay under the radar, be inconspicuous as all get out, you know, and just try to hide in the corner, you know, and fade into the, you know, rug. You know, because, you know, he could just say stuff, and he had a really, really articulate guy. Like, he was a lawyer. I mean, he could really do it, you know, with his mouth. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, you know, he was very, very verbally abusive, you know. And I didn't even know that's what that was, you know, until I got here. It really hurt. And like one of his, if he did happen to see me or I did, you know, it'd be sometimes he would say stuff like, well, Elaine, when are you going to pull your head out of your, you know. And so that's why I say, like, here was this guy that I just loved, and he would hug me, like, pre-verbal, before I could even have words, and he would say, oh, your hair smells like a beautiful flower patch, and I just felt so loved, you know. And then little by little, as the thing progressed, just like he went away, I went away, with every comment, with every, you know, hurt, I just receded a little bit more into nowhere, you know. And so alcoholism for me, you know, it's a program of isolation, a program of loneliness. You know, I just completely lost myself. And the rules in my house were like, don't feel, don't think, don't talk, don't trust, don't reach out, don't ask for help. And whatever the heck you do, you know, don't let people know what's really going on. You know, and if you're going to be asking a question that's like, you know, we're assuming that you don't know something, and so that's like really, really bad if you don't know something. Like, you had to know it before you knew it and stuff like that. And, you know, it's really no way to grow up. It's really no way to live. But I didn't recognize any of this until I, you know, got to program in. I haven't had my hair this short since I was, like, in the fourth grade. And, my mom, I just recently, you know, got it cut, and I didn't realize it was going to turn out like this. But, you know, I'm like, don't recognize myself, you know, and it's... I think my mom at one point, you know, she had gave me a pixie, and it was almost like, you know, I think about it, maybe she was trying to protect me. She was sexually abused when she was younger, and I think it was kind of like, I can't, you know, maybe if we make you a little bit more like a guy, you know. I was a tomboy anyway, you know, growing up with five brothers, like, I did everything they did, played everything they played. You know, baseball, football, kickball, and grew up in a beautiful house. And I come from Pasadena on Greenwood Street, South Greenwood. And, you know, not very many cars on it. You know, the whole neighborhood was our playground. Outside all the time, and hung out mostly with my younger brother. And I think, when I was looking for alcoholics, it was kind of like, I mean, later on, you know, it was like I'm looking for somebody to make up for the loss of all these people. Because little by little, I got lost, there was no communication. So the communication was like, you know, teasing and hostility and, you know, like, I love you so much, I'm going to punch you on the arm. So you got, you know, I had bruises on my arms. I love you so much, I'm going to kick you. You know, that kind of like, it was really physical, you know. We didn't hug each other or kiss each other or anything like that. You know, like, oh, bye. You know, it's like, I got that here. I didn't have any of that kind of stuff, you know. And I started kissing and hugging them, you know, like, whether they liked it or not. You know, I started, you know, like, I take this meeting out there. You know, live my life like it was a meeting, you know. So anyway, I was just, I guess you could say, shame and fear. And desperation categorized the feelings that I had growing up. And I, you know, was practically raised by the radio. You know, I just lived on music and the lyrics and all that. And that's like really a recipe for disaster, you know. And I thought there was going to be this one guy that was going to save it and make it all right, you know. And really setting myself up for that. And again, as I got older, I remember going to seventh grade and... thinking, well, now I got to dress for gym. I got to wear a bra. I got to, you know, and I got to become, you know, in my house, women were really, like, hated. Like, they were bad. They were, you know, so I had to deny who I was. And then, you know, in anticipation of this seventh grade thing, I just felt like, well, it may as well shoot me. It may as well kill me because I'm going to become that, you know, now. And I remember I just, like, went away. I just, like, I would go all through the day and not say a word. I would go all through the day, not use the restroom, you know, not eat, not talk to anybody. For one thing, the restrooms weren't safe, and there was like this reverse prejudice, like, you know, if you were white, then I'm going to, you know, I don't know. I was called names and got my hair pulled and, you know, stuff like that at the school I was in, and I couldn't talk about anything, like couldn't talk about any of that. And I remember my one brother, who I was so close to, he was becoming more and more like my dad. And I was just like, what? You know, like I felt, with all these changes, I just felt more and more abandoned. But I had already abandoned myself. And that's what I realized later, is that the first person who left was me. I always left, you know. And I remember when my brothers went away to college, when one brother went away to the Navy, my sister ran away from home at 15, you know, I just felt like, you know, again, like my world is falling apart, and then these people are leaving me, you know, and because of the enmeshment of the alcohol, of our alcoholic home, it just felt like, yeah, someone's taking off my leg, you know, with no anesthetic. Like, it just felt like someone was ripping pieces of me apart. But didn't understand all that, and nothing was talked about, you know. I remember just being attracted to emotionally unavailable people, and I obsessed a lot. You know, obsession is a trapped feeling seeking expression, and obsession keeps me from the grief. It keeps me from the pain. I can just go up into my head and I don't have to feel. So I obsessed a lot. I got into fantasy a lot, just like living in my head and going to my room and listening to music and stuff like that. I remember the first like real boyfriend, the first guy that I, well, I shouldn't say that, because the first kind of relationship I had as I was like, 16 or 17, I should say, you know, was a guy a lot like my dad, just a egomaniac and really just loved that. He was an actor and a model, and he was a bass player in a band called Gangrene, you know. It was like, oh, you know, I really know how to pick them, you know. And we just got together, you know. And, you know, it's funny when I think about it. It's like everything was intimated. Everything was implied. We had no direct communication whatsoever. It was all chemistry. It was just all chemistry. It's like, can you really do that? You know, it's like I saw this guy for years. And it's like, you know, I saw him, like, we weren't, like, officially boyfriend, girlfriend. We would just, like, you know, like, see each other and, you know, be together and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just all mind. I'm reading your mind and you're reading mind and, you know, mine. And neither of us knew how to be intimate. Neither of us knew how to share our feelings or be direct and honest or anything like that. And it's so weird when I think about it, but I was just madly in love with this guy. And part of it was the unavailability thing, you know, just like longing, that long, desperate longing, you know. And I related to all those songs, you know, when I was 7 years old, 8 years old, you know, and they talk about the alcoholic being tortured by loneliness, you know, and well, the Al-Anon is too, you know. It's the same disease, you know, and the alcoholic's looking for God at the wrong address. Well, we are too, you know. I was looking for that alcoholic, and the alcoholic is looking for the alcohol or the drugs or whatever, you know, and it's the same exact disease. It's the same exact disease. And anyway, when I graduated from high school, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And again, I was just so disconnected from myself. And at one point, I got a job at Caltech, and you know, my alcoholic walked in one day, and he had just come from Minnesota with his friend, and I just thought he was the cutest thing I'd ever seen, and, you know, a big old car all rusted out, you know, I thought, oh, how adventuresome, you know, how adventuresome, you know, and how much courage it must take to, like, do something like that, leave everything and just go across the country and stuff like that, and, you know. And so, we got together right away, just like that. And, you know, that was the beginning of my getting here. The first 3 months were like bliss, you know. There was just like heaven on earth, you know. Like when it clicks, it clicks, you know. And it like filled up everything. It like filled up everything. Like I said, he made up for my mom. My dad, they got divorced when I was about 11. My five brothers, my sister, you know, he made up for all that. He was supposed to make up for all that. And that's like a tall order. I don't think I could go through with it, you know. But he didn't know that, and I didn't know that. I got these unrealistic expectations, you know, and misplaced dependency. You know, I'm like all over that. And so, you know, I started noticing, man, this guy likes to party, you know. Like he like smokes pot all day long and all night long. And he really likes to drink in the morning. You know, like, I'm just kind of noticing, you know. And because we immediately, like, he moved in with me and stuff. And you know, but he's so cute. And you know, like, that was my only criteria. You know, that was it. It's just like, that was my only criteria. And, you know, it's funny, you know, at one point his friends came out from Minnesota, you know, these big tough guys, you know, and they're like, brr, brr, it's cold, you know, like they all get this little Minnesota saying, you know, brr, it's cold. I thought it was so corny, so cute. But anyway, so, you know, we started having arguments and we started having fights, and, you know, I could talk to you for an hour just on jealousy alone. Just jealousy alone. I was so insecure, totally insecure, full of fear, full of resentment. I didn't know it. Replaceable, so easily replaceable. You know, my dad would talk about women in front of all of us, in front of my mom. You know, just talk about them, if you know what I mean. Just everything, you know. And that was like the example. I mean, we had... At the dinner table, there was, I guess I can say that in here, like, he would talk about pornography or a X-rated movie. I mean, this is dinner table conversation, you know, and just really sad. And so there was this thing in me that was just like, yeah, you know, no one's going to ever love me. No one's going to ever stay, for one thing, you know. So... That started happening too, and just like my world just started getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and that's alcoholism too. It just shrinks everything till it's down to a little teeny space, you know, and everything's tight. And you know, we would argue and fight, and then we would make up. And at one point, he was in this motorcycle accident, and he was like literally thrown across this, you know. I don't know, 4 and 4/8 lane highway, you know, his helmet flies off, you know, and a truck hit him. And, you know, when I got the call from the hospital, there was a part of me that was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I can do this, you know, I can really do this. And another part of it, I have to say, I'm ashamed to say, but, you know, now he really needs me, like, he needs me. And so, you know, I could use that needing thing as a replacement for true love, real love, you know. And so, you know, the doctor said, well, he'll never walk again. Then they say, well, he'll never walk without a limp, and well, he'll never do sports, you know. And he just did everything, like he really totally recovered. And that was, you know, but then his disease and my disease really progressed during that time. And, you know, I'm the person banging on his chest in the middle of the night, like he's asleep, you know, and I'm like, we need to talk, you know. You know, you know. There was so much in me, you know, like I said, it's been stuffed everything, right? I've stuffed everything all my life, so this guy is taking the brunt of all of that. Like, there's no, you know, there's no letting up, you know. And yeah. So, at one point he, you know, we break up and get back together and break up and get back together. And at one point we broke up, and I said, well, you know, I'm going to go to work and you need to be moved out of here by the time I get out, by the time I get home. And so I got a call at work that he had, you know, gotten suicidal. You know, had a gun to his head, because we had guns, of course, you know. you know, right? It's all part of the picture, you know. I remember one time my sister, she came home from, you know, she was going to the music conservatory in San Francisco. Totally talented, brilliant woman. And she came home, you know, and like, oh, you know, what's that shotgun doing along the side of your bed? You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I just have it there for protection. You know, like, we live in East Pasadena. Like, who's going to break in? You know, who's going to, you know. But, you know, when they say we take on the hurts, the fears, the guilt of the alcoholic, we become sick too. I had taken on that paranoia, like, oh, yeah, you don't know. You know, somebody might, you know, whatever, you know. And so I remember she was like, ooh, you know, huh, you know. And at that point, I was just so disconnected from my family. I'm sure they were just going like, who are you? You know, like, who are you? And so anyway, I got that call, and instead of killing himself, this guy checks himself into a program in Glendale. And I'm like, shit. You know, like, wow, like, again, I was like, oh, he's got so much courage, wow, you know, like, I could never do that, and then when I got there, they were like, well, we're glad you're here, you're sicker than he is, you know, it's like, yeah, because I could never do that, right, that thing in me that said, you know, oh, you don't reach out for help, are you kidding? That's ridiculous, you know. So the fact that he did, I was just like amazed. And then when I brought his little things, like the next day, you know, we weren't supposed to have any contact, but he was across the room just weeping. And this was the tough guy, you know, the macho guy. And he was just weeping. And I'm like, God is effing doing something here. And I don't even have a God at that point. But something down here is saying, wow, something's happening. Something's happening here, you know. It's like a spiritual awakening, you know, and just coming to a meeting for me today, coming here tonight, getting in the car to come to a meeting, it's like a spiritual experience, because I know what I'm in for. Oh, and welcome to the newcomers. Happy birthday to all the birthday people. And, you know, the newcomers, it's cool. It's like, you know, they say, well, you're the lifeblood of the program, you know, and they're probably going, life? Blood. What does that mean? You know, and you know, to me, it's like, you know, the higher power comes through us to reach you, and so we get the benefit. You get everyone benefits. You know, and the energized by that higher power coming through me to meet you. You know, and you know, we kind of with the newcomers, we kind of like smile. You know, because we know what you're in for. We know. I mean, oh, I mean in a good way. You know, like. I mean, like, you know, there's a higher power, and his will for you is to be happy, joyous, and free. So we got, like, these goofy grins, like, oh, hey, glad to meet you, you know, welcome, you know, because that's what happens here. So, you know, and he's going from across the room, if I go back to my story, he's going, forgive me, and I'm like, man, like, he's never said that to me before, you know, it was awesome. You know, it was awesome. I just knew. And so I went to my first meeting because, you know, they recommend that, you know, the loved ones and family and all these people are in Minnesota. So I was the one attending the little family stuff. And, you know, it was awesome. The first thing we did was take a round of feelings and stuff like that. Like, feelings? Like, what? You know? And I, you know, yeah. Yeah, like, never heard of such a thing. You know, so I started going, and I remember I went to my first meeting on my grandmother's birthday, you know, in 87, June of 87, and, you know, everybody was smiling, and I read a good quote. It said, peace begins with a smile. And I thought, you know, as that is really like a ceasefire, you know, like we are not fighting anyone or anything in here. We have laid down our weapons, right? And we're picking up a few tools, right, that's going to save our life and take us in. You know, I am doing these things that I've never done before because I want to have an effing life that I've never had before. So that's why I'm doing all this weird stuff, you know, like, what? Like, what? You know, and you know, higher power and all that stuff. And keep coming back. It works, you know, and all that weird stuff. And, Because it really works, you know. And so I went to my first meeting and conscious contact with a higher power, and I didn't even have one yet. You know, I just felt it, I just the spirit in the room, same spirit that's in this room, touched me, you know. And here's these people with way worse problems than me, way worse problems than me, just laughing and smiling. And, you know, conscious unity with God is the solution. And a conscious separation from God is the problem. And that's where I had lived all my life, just dead. Just young person, just dead. Totally disconnected from my power source. Didn't even know it. So I come here, and I'm starting, and I'm getting connected. You know, what's a meeting? You know, it's I'm getting connected. You know, and my higher power uses all of you. And he uses the steps, the readings, all that stuff. You know, my higher power and the words, you know, these words are spirit and they're life. No kidding. No kidding. And all that, all those words that I had heard growing up, you know, I've been called every name in the book. I was called stupid, dumb, fat, ugly. Every day of my life, never heard of child of God. You know, like I had women talk to me at the break. Hey, you know, oh, honey, you know, you're a child of God. God has brought you here for help, you know, and they used the word God. They didn't say higher power. You know, they said God, you know, and I didn't have a God at that point or a higher power or anything like that. But I just got a sense of, you know, they're knowing something. They're believing something here that's real. And obviously, I don't have any of that, you know. And when you believe the truth, you get well. You believe a lie, you get sicker and sicker and sicker. And that's where I had lived all my life, just in a big pool of it. You know, just getting worse and worse and worse because it is a progressive disease, you know. So you better believe I kept coming back. I didn't really hear anything at that first meeting. I mean, I heard it. I think my heart heard it, you know. Like they talk about, it's the language of the heart and what comes from the heart reaches the heart. So not that I went out of the room, you know, with something on my mind about that, but I had just been touched, you know. And later on, I go, you know, was to go to meetings. And I run out to my car, write down what I heard. And it's like if the words, you know, I was told if the words are standing up on the inside of you, that's your higher power talking to you. You know, write that stuff down. I'm writing it down, and I'm like reading it over my coffee. I'm like meditating this thing out, you know. And I heard a good definition of meditation, you know, besides just to think deeply on something. You know, meditation, just mull it over, just rethink this thing. Because I did that all my life with the lies that I was told. I did that all my life with this wrong information. I can maybe start to do that, you know. And then meditation changes what I believe. It's God's way of changing what I believe. You know, somewhere along the line, I started believing I was a child of God. And you know that my mom and dad, that whatever, you know, whatever happened to me, whatever transpired, that my God, my higher power had used these people to bring me to the earth, to bring me to himself. That's basically it. Like, okay, you guys done your job. Now I'll take over from here. You know, is what my higher power was saying. You know, and so it's like it didn't matter so much what they did do, what they didn't do, what they could give me, what they couldn't give me. I was in a place of safety now, you know, and I was in a place of security, and I didn't have to worry like that. And, you know, I can only communicate from a point of security. So that's why all my life I could never communicate. There was no security. What kind of security I'm standing on here, you know? Alcoholism doesn't provide for that. Doesn't provide for that. So anyway, you better believe I was going to meetings almost every night. And I just knew that there was something here that I really, really needed. And I wouldn't have said, oh, you know, I went to my first meeting and I was home. You know, like, I didn't even know what home was, you know? I didn't know what that was supposed to feel like, but I just knew that I really wanted what you guys had. And so I'm going to meetings, and, you know, things started to change, and my alcoholic staying sober, and I was, you know, I was losing a little bit of the fear and gaining a little bit of security and confidence and a sense of well-being, you know. And I'd always leave the meeting happier. I'd always leave the meeting better off than when I'd come. And then at one point, you know, he went out after 6 months, and I just thought, oh, shoot, you know, like, it's all over, you know, because, again, my whole life is based on what he's doing, what he's not doing. You know, is he in the program? Then I'm cool. Is he not in the program? Oh, whoa, you know. And so I just learned a really good lesson. He was out for a year, and we had been living together all this time, and he was out for a year, and you know, I went to a meeting that day, and they just said, you know, you've got living problems, you know, keep coming back. Like, it's not about him, you know, like, can we get that? You know, it's not about him. You know, there's enough stuff in me to keep me here, you know, permanently, you know. So, it's not about him. And I still need to be reminded of that. I been coming back for a few days here, you know, and I still need to be reminded of that. Because I live in a body, you know, sensory world and all that. But I started around 6 months. I got a sponsor, and because I had that trust thing, and I couldn't trust, and it was impossible to trust. And they said pray about it. I was using the group as a sponsor, and did 1, 2, and 3, and I started doing 4. And I prayed about it. And son of a gun, if God didn't provide a sponsor, like, right away, you know. And I used her and stuff, and did a 4th. I was going to say, with step 2, I didn't have a problem with step 1 at all. Step 2, came to believe the part, you know, I was getting that. I still had a problem with God. I not by the 4th step, but you know, when I first took step 2, I had a problem with God, but I just was really flowing with what the rest of the group was doing and led by examples, you know. And then with step 3, they said, you know, let your higher power be anything you want. Let it be good. Let it be love. Let it be anything but you, you know. You know, the main difference between me and God is he never thinks he's me, you know. And it's like, yeah. So, you know, my first higher power was love, you know, of course, right? Because I come from, you know, that R&B rock and roll background, you know, so it's love, you know. And, you know, later on I found out, you know, my higher power to be, you know, that God is love. Good choice, you know, that God is love, you know. And so again, I, you know, started working the steps, you know, and, you know, people always talk about with the 5th step, oh, you know, this great big weight was lifted, you know. I'm right in my 4th step and the great big weight is being lifted, because I'm just articulating all this stuff that I've never said before, I never even thought before. You know, I just weeping and rioting and mad and glad and just, you know, getting set free. Getting set free. So did the 5th and all that. Got another sponsor right around there, and this woman was just really loving. You know, it's like I needed that. I was so glad no one told me to sit down, shut up, and listen. You know, I would have, like, ran away. Like, I've heard that all my life. You know, I've been talked to bad all my life. Like, please don't tell me to shut up and listen, you know. And this woman was just so warm. Like, she was just so happy to see me and so glad. You know, I was so busy most of my life trying not to be seen, you know. And even today when I'm at a meeting, I say it all the time. I say, good to see you, good to see you, good to see you. Because people always told me, good to see you, you know. And it's really good to be seen. Like, it was part of that denial, you know. Like, I'm not even here, you know. Like, the disease of alcoholism told me, I'm not even here. You know, there's not even a person here, you know. And so in finding myself, it is good to be seen. Yeah, it is good to be seen, you know. And to be acknowledged, you know. And I remember my first sponsor telling me, you know, Elaine, when you smile at people, it makes them feel good, you know. And something so simple. I thought, I got nothing to give. What do I have to give? I feel like a worn-out rag, squeezed dry, you know. And I thought, oh, shoot, huh, you know, like, hmm. And it was like right after that, I got my first commitment, you know. I was like coffee person, and then I was like secretary and stuff. And anyway, so, you know, doing the 6th and the 7th and just really starting to develop a dependency upon my higher power. And I know today I'm totally dependent on the higher power, and that's exactly where I belong. Not, you know, like, God can use anybody he wants. You know, I'm married. Like, I tend to think, well, you know, he's my husband. Like, I can depend on him for that, can I? You know, and God's like, oh, maybe not. You know, like, I'll use whoever the heck I want. I'm God, right? You know, and it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, the 12 steps is like 12 steps off the throne. you know, little by little by little. I was on the throne of my life, just making a complete mess, just a disaster of everything. And so I'm, you know, one by one, I'm stepping off. Oh, yeah, there's the higher power. You know, now I'm not in charge, and the higher power is running things. It's starting to feel better. It's starting to go smoother. I'm losing the fear. I'm like noticing when my alcoholic gets mad and it says something mean to me. My immediate thought is, wow, he doesn't feel very good about himself, does he? Like, wow, you know, he must really be hurting to talk that way, you know, versus taking it on like, oh, what did I do? How can I fix it? What did I do wrong? You're just tweaking it. Just tweaking it a little bit. Like, yeah, like, that was a spiritual experience. I remember when that first time that ever happened with my alcoholic. I'm like, oh, shoot, so I'm not the cause of all this misery. My dad always threatened suicide, you know, and again, that was dinner conversation, and, just give me a gun, just give me a gun, you know. And the man was really, really, you know, he was depressed, and, I understand him so much now. I understand him. I relate to him so much. You know, stuffed everything, a perfectionism thing. He didn't want to be abandoned or rejected. So you better believe he's going to be perfect. I mean, his parents were looking for that, you know. So he was going to be perfect. But at the same time, it's a recipe for misery. And for misery for the people around you, you know. But alcoholism is a disease. It's not a choice. It's a disease. It's not a fault. You know, and I always blamed him, and I always hated him. You know, I loved him, but I hated him, you know, and that kind of stuff. I remember with my first fifth step, you know, my sponsors all, were you raped? You know, I mean, there was so much stuff in me, so much stuff, you know. Shocked myself, you know. But unmet needs, you know, anger, unmet needs, you know. Getting your toes stepped on for 25 years, oh, that hurts, you know. That really hurts, you know. So, I mean, it all makes sense in the context. So I began to, you know, even see my dad, and I totally see my dad now, especially the thing with Al-Anon where they say you can separate the person from the disease. Like, hate the disease. Go ahead, hate the disease. But you can love the person, and you can see that this is a child of God. God made this person, you know. I found a higher power in here that, you know, he loves and accepts me unconditionally, has a beautiful plan and purpose for my life, and it's unfolding a day at a time. You know, that is so far from what I was taught, you know, all my life. That is so far. I felt so purposeless and so pointless, you know. But anyway, so yeah, I'm working the steps, and let's see, 8 and 9, I made a list of all those people that I had harmed, and you know, made the list and put it underneath my mattress. And I say, well, if anything's going to happen with this, God, you're going to be the one to do it because I'm scared to death, you know. And little by little, you know, God, this higher power, who I started to call God, would bring people across my path that, you know, like I hadn't seen this person in 10 years, you know, or whatever, you know, just weird stuff like that. And so that I could make amends. And I remember I stole a lot of money from employers and stuff like that, and stores. I stole a lot, and you know, I know today I was just taking, like, what I thought was love, this taking. It was just so symbolic, taking, because I needed love so bad, you know. So I got to make amends for all that, like little by little the money would come in and I'd, you know, be able to pay this person off or that person off. Because I had heard it, you know, like I was in step meetings before I was on that step, so I'd hear all kinds of stuff, like this one guy who walked into the IRS, you know, office and turned himself in for a $20,000 debt. I thought, well, if he can do a $20,000 debt, I guess I can do my, you know, hundreds of dollar debt or whatever, you know. And so just little by little, things just became more manageable, like got into a more manageable size. And so I started making those amends. And at the same time, I don't know where I'm going. I need to finish up. Let me just say... I am married to a sober alcoholic today. And, you know, I do need to be here, you know, alcoholism, not alcoholism. And I work it with him. I'm working it, you know, because still I got these expectations that are unrealistic. You know, he has every right to be exactly who he is, period. You know, and the people in my life, everybody has the right to not recover. You know, I didn't know that. I just thought, hey, well, what's wrong with you? You know, like, there's a meeting. You know, there's an answer for people like you. You know, everybody's got the right to not recover. You know, I'm not in charge, and I get to love people. I get to love people, and that's my work. You know, what is it to? I love our fifth tradition. I just love, you know, we practice these principles ourselves. We encourage and we understand our alcoholic relatives. We welcome and give comfort to the families of alcoholics. And then in step 12, it talks about, you know, we, as a result of these steps, we had a spiritual awakening. Totally true for me. I had like a white light one. I had many, it's all been the educational variety as well. And carry this message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. All my affairs. Well, that's a purpose right there that I could just work on that one purpose. And, you know, with purpose comes passion, you know, and comes the very life of God, you know. And that has been my greatest joy, you know, is that. So, I don't know. Let me wrap this up. Got two kids. Never thought I'd even be married, you know. My dad always said, you know, marriage is a curse, children are a curse, all this stuff. I remember I had to go to therapy just to marry this guy. Like, you know, there was so much stuff in me that just said, you know, no way, you know, no way, you'll die, you know. And, you know, haven't died, you know, I'm fine. You know, but I thoroughly enjoy my life today. Again, I thoroughly enjoy my life today. No drama. I give me enjoyment. I don't want the excitement. I don't want the drama. I want that enjoyment. You know, I say thank you to God every morning when I get on my knees right out of bed, and every night I'm lying in my bed and I go, oh, and thank you. I love it. Such a warm bed, and thank you. And I'm noticing my blessings, you know. Man, I never lived like that. You know, the curtain's closed. I'm not answering the phone, that kind of thing. Don't talk to me. That's where I come from, you know. I mean, right before I got here. But anyway, so my life is full today. And I guess I'll just stop with this. This one, it's kind of corny, but I do love it because it's so accurate. This one guy at one meeting one time shared this thing, and he said, God is the place, I am the place where God shines through. For we are one and not two. I need not worry, fret, nor fear, plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, he will work his plan through me. You know, so I'm like, yeah, you know, that's what meetings does for me. It opens me up to the plan of a higher power. And the rest of the stuff just falls away. The rest of the stuff just falls. It's not necessary. It just falls away. You know, so I'm grateful to be here. And thank you very, very much for saving my life. Appreciate it. Yeah.